AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware, and people from all over the USA can tune in simply by logging on to SaturdayVarietyProgram.com and all of the other ways that you have of listening to the broadcast, including Alexa 860 AM. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you heard today's intro, that was done some time ago by Henry, our engineer, and his family. And how are we going to get 15 to 20 million new jobs here in the United States? You know, that's a very, very good statement, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. You know, our theme since 1999 is buy American-made products and you support American workers. And I want to say a special thank you to our panel members, Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, a great guy who never gave up. And in fact, when things got tough, he went and he made the Made in America store come true. Larkin Conley, the national small business advocate, person involved with SCORE over the years, who's been in the business community, so he has a good idea what's going on. Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I am Michael Blihash. Before I go to our guest, I want to say a thank you to all of our listeners, supporters, and friends for helping us to promote the Buy American Made campaign and all of our efforts to support American workers. We are what is often referred to as a grassroots effort to save and increase jobs in the United States of America. Can you imagine how much better things would be here in the USA if the national news media and national elected leaders looked out for America and American workers? Well, to help us discuss what's happening in the United States, I'm pleased to welcome back a very special guest. He's been with us a few times. His name is Daniel Turner, a person who shared a lot of information, and I must compliment him. He got a lot of people saying, well, this is what we need. If this guy was in Congress, or maybe we could make him the president or something, things would be a lot better. Daniel Turner is the founder and executive director of Power the Future. It's also referred to as PTF. And for almost 20 years, he has worked in communications and public affairs for several nonprofits. Daniel is an advocate for rural energy communities in the Power Center of Washington, D.C., which makes the policy decisions which impact energy workers. Daniel's really an expert in energy and environmental issues to the United States economy, international affairs, and our national security, which is something all of us really have to start to be considerate of as all these prices and all are going up. Daniel is also a regular guest on Fox News, Fox Business, Newsmax, and 1,000 radio programs, including 1210 AM, heard in the Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania area, and with us also on American Workers. Let's welcome back Daniel Turner. Daniel, how are you doing these days?
Oh, it is always great to be on your program. Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, Daniel, as we discussed in the past, America's national leaders are allowing gas and overall energy prices to rise while doing absolutely nothing to even to mention the fact that just a little over 1% of the cars here in the United States are capable of operating on batteries, and 98%+ need gas and fossil fuels to keep the cars moving. What's the problem? What's the difficulty in telling the people the facts and the figures.
Yeah, numbers shouldn't really scare us, and they shouldn't stifle a conversation. These are facts that are readily available, and we need to look at them and explain them and then have an honest conversation if we're heading in the right direction. You know, something very interesting that just happened in the last few weeks since last I was on your program. We have this Inflation Reduction Act, which extended the tax credit to buy an electric vehicle. So, right, that seems like it was presented as a positive thing. Your $7,500 tax credit to buy an electric vehicle gets extended. Ford, 2 days after that, announces they're raising the price of their electric trucks by $8,500. And you say, huh, well, that kind of announces it. And then just about 2 days ago, Ford announced they're laying off around 2,500 workers in the Michigan area. And then Michigan taxpayers said, well, wait a second, we've given you about $110 million in tax credit these last couple of years. Are you keeping it? And Ford said, yes, no, we're keeping the money. We're just laying off 2,500 workers. And so when you add all those things together, you realize, as your intro said, government is not helping us create jobs. Government's creating an environment that's canceling jobs, that's raising prices, that's making goods more affordable. Government seems to be the problem in all of this. And Ford, one of the great American brands and companies and legacies of Ford, is very clearly laying it all out for us. They're raising prices despite incentives. They're firing people despite tax breaks. And who's winning as a result of this government mess? No one.
No one. It's taken our economy down. And, you know, after 19 months of this unrealistic presidential executive order, it's really been robbing the American people. And there is no bottom line to it. It just continues to go and go. And everything they talk about is giving money to people, but never trying to get this thing back into control. What is the easiest way you see that would bring us back to where we should be?
The easiest and only long-term sustainable solution is to drastically increase the amount of American energy production, and that's oil, gas, and coal, and nuclear too, where it's feasible. Now, granted, nuclear takes an awful long time, decades, to come online. But the only long-term solution is for government to get out of the way and to allow us to produce more of our own domestic energy. It would increase the supply tremendously. It would send market signals that would drastically drive down prices, that would lower the price of all goods and services, and it will slowly drive down the cost of inflation. That's the fastest, and even that fast, quote-unquote, solution is going to take weeks and months for it to actually have a noticeable effect, but it will have an effect. If we did it now, by Christmas time, we would be in much better shape. It's the only solution, but that requires believing that American fossil fuels are good, and we have an administration that believes American fossil fuels are bad. So right there, that's the crux of our problem, and that's why we're never going to have a solution from this president.
You know, Daniel, would you say that the president and his few people that were around him thought this thing out to begin with?
No, that requires thought, and that requires knowledge, and it requires experience. And none of those folks have those things. They are all elected officials. And there is something very impressive about getting elected. Don't get me wrong. I've worked on a lot of campaigns. My uncle was in Congress. I worked on his campaign. I've worked on presidential campaigns. There is a skill and there is a talent in winning a national or a state level or even a local election. But that's very different than the great folks you have on this phone call, on this radio show, who have all gotten their hands dirty in business. And Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Jennifer Granholm, Pete Buttigieg, Gina Raimondo, she's the Commerce Secretary, they're all just career politicians with very, very little real-world experience other than corporate law and then running for office and using that office to seek a higher office. They've never had a real job. And so since they've never had real jobs, they don't know how things work, and therefore they don't understand how drastic the actions they've taken are, how much it damages industry, the market signals that it sends to investors. They don't understand any of that because they've never lived in that world.
As I listen to some of the shows, which someone asked me to watch a particular show, and I did, that's exactly the feeling I had. I said, this person has no idea what they're talking about. They're saying the thing that really provoked me is the person said, well, we have raised the hourly rate to $15 an hour. They thought it was a badge of honor. And I thought, well, $15 an hour for 40 hours, that's $600 a week, less your taxes. So you walk home with $475. And then if you have to fill your tank, it's 50 bucks right off the 475. Where's the rest? The housing, the fuel that you have to heat or cool your home, and everything else, your insurance. These people are really living in some kind of a bubble that, how do we do it? But the biggest thing people are telling me, and I'm really pleased, and I'm going to bring up a few things that we talked about at some recent events, that people are starting to speak up, and they just don't know if there's anybody in the whole system right now that's capable of really being a national leader of this country. It's all politics. Yeah. It's all money. It's all who I am. I'm everything. When it comes to running for president, the next time around, I would like to see 20 people put their name in and a year in advance. And those 20 people during that entire year should have endless debates on television to tell us what they are thinking on every imaginable issue that we send in as the taxpayers and as the people of America. Not these questions that the news media wants to put out there to maybe cause some kind of little hell on television. That doesn't mean anything. The last time around, when President Trump was elected, on that stage, there was a number of people in the debates. I would like to see those and others come out and let's get this thing discussed. We have to talk about a few things, Daniel, like we have to make America the best place to do business. National leaders must approve long-term tax incentives to businesses so they want to come back, want to expand in the United States. But now with the rising cost of energy, that's another deterrent for them not to come. Then you have offering incentives to America to have their businesses invent new products with new brand names. Do we all have to have a brand name that we used for 20 years? Why can't we have the Daniel Turner, you know, brand? It doesn't matter. I'm not married to any brands, and make all of those products here in the United States as a competitive product. But now with this all this energy crisis, this is another issue. People say, oh, I'll just have to keep it the way it is in foreign countries because I know that at least the labor is going to be less. The shipping get over to America is going to go up, but at least the labor. And, you know, we have to expand and restore a lot of trade and technology programs in America's schools. There's no discussion about that in most school districts. In fact, people are saying, I can't find a plumber, I can't find an electrician, I can't find people to fix my heating and air conditioning units. I got to wait 2 months. Well, if that happens to you in June, 2 months is August. What do you do for those 2 months if the unit totally went down, the motor went? It's these kinds of things, and yet they don't want to do it. And when I speak to the national elected leaders, especially about energy issues, I've been pushing it very heavy to put in some kind of an emergency act. And one politician did tell me this in the very beginning when Biden first signed the executive order. He said, Michael, this could be ended in a week. And I said, tell me how. And he said, if you can get a few people to introduce a special piece of legislation that says we want to retain all drilling in America, production of oil and gas and everything, as it was in the year 2020. You're not insulting Biden, who is saying, no, you know, we don't want fossil fuels, but we want to do it the way it is and put it through the House and Congress, and you see who's going to sign it and who's going to reject it. And the people who reject keeping our jobs and our fuel open lines here in the USA are the first people who should be escorted out of elected office when it comes time for the election. This is coming from an elected person, and that's already 18 months ago. And I called around to some of the good elected people in our area, and the word fear, the fear of putting such a piece of legislation on the record, not to go against the president, but to say we just want everything to remain the same as it was in 2020. What would you think of such a piece of legislation?
Well, there's clearly a lot of electoral fear, and our members of Congress have used COVID for an excuse for years now to avoid even having town halls with their constituents. And that used to be a regular part of the summertime. Your elected leaders would be, their Congress would be in recess, they would be back in their state or in their district, and they would regularly hold town halls, and they want to hear from people. They want to hear what they have to say, especially in an election cycle. But because they don't want to face the voters, they either use COVID protocols as an excuse. They use it as an excuse to not even vote. We're still voting by proxy in the House of Representatives, something we've never done, something technically which is unconstitutional. But COVID, of course, allows you to break all laws. And then the only events that they have are just campaign rallies where they surround themselves with like-minded folks. So not only do we have that sort of fear of facing their constituents, but we also have fear of, again, the Inflation Reduction Act. Look at what they called it and look at what they talk about it. The Biden talks about it as the most important piece of climate legislation ever. Well, why wasn't it called the Climate Legislation Act? Because climate's not in the news. If you poll people, less than 1% by a New York Times poll, fewer than 1% of Americans care about climate change as a national issue. So they can't call it a climate legislation, but everyone knows how much they're paying for bread and for meat and for milk. So they call it the Inflation Reduction Act. But when they speak about it, they talk about healthcare and climate change. And you say, well, why would you lie to the American people? Why not call it the Children with Cancer Act? It doesn't matter what you call it. The legislation has nothing to do with the nomenclature. So Congress has gotten very accustomed to lying to the American people, either avoiding them, avoiding their tough scrutiny, their tough questions, or avoiding real legislation that they're putting their name to, because they all just want to keep their jobs.
Daniel, you're absolutely right. I wish you could be on the stage with one of the people, all the people running for president, because this is the kind of conversation would generate positive attention from the American people. Daniel, you know Mark Andel from past broadcasts. He just had 2 weeks of a very big festival he's been running, and I'm sure he knows more about energy prices up there in Buffalo. Mark, welcome our great guest, Daniel Turner.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike and Daniel? Welcome aboard again. Always great to have you on. Learn a lot, and I hope Rich and Larkin are on with us, Mike. The dust is settling. So I do the Erie County Fair, Dan. It's the second largest county fair in the country, 1.2 million in regular times. People travel through the show in 12 days, and we don't miss a beat. So I can't say enough for my team and my supporters, because we run the two General Weldings, the four brick-and-mortar stores, and we open a 6,000-square-foot Made in America store at the fair, and we had a 10,000-plus General Welding and Fabricating display with our MSA brand trailers we build and all our metal products and plows. And quite a display. We grew at Mike 40% this year. We're supposed to be slowing down, but we didn't, and I put every day into the fair. A lot of talk with my Kearney friends, the guys. James E. Strait's been running shows for years, and my good friends from down in Florida that run the shows up the East Coast. So I always love, Daniel, to talk to them about fuel and about the economy. So basically they said the East Coast shows, all your fairs and events were going well until about April when the fuel prices went up. Disposable income went down for a lot of the families and people that visit these fairs. And they noticed that in April and May got worse. But fuel is the one item that truly affected the people right in their pockets and affected the traffic and attendance of these shows. So I thought that was interesting. Our show did very well. When I went to our show, I worked every day plus the business 8 hours, and then you go to the show until 10 at night. So you get 12, 14 hours in a day, 12 days in a row. But I'd done it 33 years. And talking to the people this year, though, the people didn't talk politics. I was very surprised. I meet a lot of people. And they were happy just to be out. They were happy to eat the fair food that's not so diet friendly. They did really, it was kind of really a refresher to hear people just getting out. I did talk to some of my friends that are from overseas, Holland, and you know, involved with the European Union. I thought it was real interesting. They gave me their take on the Ukraine war and the corruption there and different things. But they said with Russia, you know, they put sanctions. We put sanctions on countries that affected me because my customers with the oil industry absolutely deal with these countries that were their customers. But I think it was interesting. I was told that Russia now sells to India, which isn't sanctioned from the European Union, and that allows everybody and their brother to buy from India then. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's something that never was discussed when we talked about sanctioning Russian oil. And by the way, congrats on your success. I was actually at the Erie County Fair in 2006, so it's been a while.
Where were you?
I was at the absolutely.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's a great fair. They really... Even my Kearney friends, all the friends that do fairs said it's the cleanest fair, cleaner than our state fair. They do a heck of a job out there. And this year, we really made it successful. So in these tough times, it was definitely refreshing to see that.
No, it's a wonderful fair. But you raise a great point when it comes to international petrodollars, right? We understandably sanctioned Russian oil. I get it, right? We can discuss whether it was a good or bad idea, but we did. But what we didn't do is we didn't prohibit the sale outright. And so Russia just turned to other countries that didn't pay attention to the sanction, China primarily, and they sold it at a premium. So when oil was $120 a barrel, China was buying it for roughly $90 a barrel, as was India, as were other countries. And so they actually did really well. And so, yes, we had the moral victory of saying we refuse to allow Russian oil into our economy, and the European Union did the same, but our decision made life more affordable for other countries. Now, I clearly wouldn't call India an enemy, but I would China, and they benefited greatly from that sanction. And so these, you know, again, it's this quote I always go back to from Milton Friedman, where he would just kind of tilt his head to the side and say, so you see, these things are a lot more complicated than they seem. And that's the answer, right? These sanctions are not as cut and dry as Team Biden made it sound. We didn't punish Putin. We actually gave him a stronger trading partner that benefited China, that benefited Russia. The ruble is stronger now than it was 6 months ago against the dollar.
You know,
those are the results.
I talked to my European friends, and that's basically what they said. There's always a way to navigate around, and the facts are the facts. And when you hear these things, I like to check with you, the expert. But also, I just sat through my health insurance annual review, and my friend for 30-something years, our health insurance, we said employees, and what a mess that is, too. The Biden administration, nothing's changed. They talk about change, but our insurance has basically went up 10-20% for Blue Cross Blue Shield. And that's just that's shifting gears. But the whole point is everything's going up. I had liability insurances go up 47% for a business in 1 year. And these changes, and you add the fuel, I don't care if it's $4 or $5 now. you shouldn't be happy at that level, because that's affecting everybody still. It's just amazing to me what, you know, if people see it on TV, they do it. When Trump was in office, there was money. Businesses were busy. Things were rock and rolling. And you were just, you didn't have to watch TV. You felt the growth and the excitement and the enthusiasm in the economy.
Absolutely. 2019 was America's most successful year in three very important and cash-heavy, cash-intensive, petty cash-intensive industries. Restaurants, hotels, and travel and tour, and retail. So tourism, retail purchasing, and restaurants. And why was 2019 our best year for those three things? Because goods were cheap. And gas was, and energy was cheap. And what do you do when you have excess cash? You take your wife to dinner, right? You go buy a new coat. You go on vacation. You go away for the weekend. You get a hotel. You look at the, you know, La Quinta Inn, and you're like, yeah, $150 a night, big deal. Let's go to Shenandoah for a couple days, right? So you can do those things when gas is $1.89 a gallon, and your electric bill is 46% cheaper than it currently is. And that's why that 2019 will stand out as such a banner year. When Americans have excess cash, they tend to, maybe it's a bad thing, but they tend to spend it, right? We like to buy things. We like to live in America. But right now we don't have any excess cash. In fact, I just saw a report today that 20% of American households are late on their electric bill, highest statistic in recorded history. And the reason why we're late on our electric bill is because we don't have the money. Right, that has all the indicators of economic collapse. If you're not paying your electric bill, then you're certainly not paying your credit card bill, and you're certainly not paying other bills. And that's an indication we're headed in the very, very wrong direction.
Wow, that was well said, Daniel. Wow, you see, this is why it's important. I would like to hear candidates running for all major offices, especially for president, discussing things the way you just presented them. We just had all these pre-recorded questions. Oh, we're going to only ask these questions. And that. No, we want to hear the real, you know, real issues of the day. How about we ask Larkin Conley to welcome our guest, Daniel Turner. Larkin, how you doing?
Hey, Daniel. Welcome back to the show. It's great to have you. Listen,
I spent
about 30 years in the oil business, and there were a group of us of the same generation that were around when the big six, the seven sisters all got kind of ripped apart, and it turned into Mobil, Exxon, and Amoco, BP. I mean, it's been crazy. But back in those days, there were a handful of us. I ran a company for Gulf Oil. And there was a guy from ARCO, and there were about nine of us. And every time there was a national show or a get-together, we'd get together and sit down and have a few pops after the evening news was on. And we called ourselves the Dipsticks. And based on what I'm hearing from you, the next time I talk to any one of the Dipsticks, I'm going to nominate you to become a member. We have a unique outlook on energy, and it very much matches the one that you have. It's really amazing. But you know, now we naturally right now have arrived, as most democracies do, at a real big time moment of truth. It's hard for me to contemplate American public life in the 21st century and not arrive at the unhappy conclusion that we have been and are being led by a bunch of idiots. The political class, all of the elected people in the District of Columbia, all politicians, without regard to your party, have lately produced an epic string of just flat out debacles. You know, it started with whose anniversary we're celebrating in the last couple of days and the next couple of days, and that's the the Afghanistan pullout, where we decided that it wasn't really a bad thing to lose 13 soldiers that we put directly in harm's way without any thought. And we also thought it would be pretty cool to leave $507 billion worth of armaments behind, so that we could arm what is now or soon to be, if it isn't already, our enemy. I mean, we left airplanes and jeeps and rifles, and it's amazing. The urban crime wave is just at its worst. And we talk about the easy to see coming inflation, that, you know, no matter how you approach it, Washington did not react to what has come. The mayhem at the southern border. Arizona announced today that they have confiscated in the last 12 months 6 million fentanyl pills have been seized on Arizona soil coming across at the border. 6 million. And last week they confiscated 200,000 pounds of fentanyl. And if I could put 2,000 pounds of fentanyl into perspective, that's enough fentanyl to kill every American without regard to age. Every American. And at our self-generated energy crisis, what's Europe need right now? Natural gas. So what did we decide to cut off and stop producing? Natural gas. We had a built-in customer. We had an entire continent that now is under the stress of not having enough power for their manufacturing, let alone just their citizens. It's just amazing. And then we have the old standbys of mind-boggling, expensive welfare state that doesn't work, public schools that make kids dumber, universities that nature destructive grievances and noxious ideologies, and a news media that absolutely nobody particularly cares for or listens to or trusts. I'm going to give you a real quick quote before I turn it back to you, Michael. This came from, to me, one of the greatest politicians of the last in the history of this country, and that's Ronald Reagan. And I'm going to read to you point by point that which he said we needed to do in Washington, D.C. And again, without regard to party, it's time to clean house, reelect nobody. It's time to clean out the privileges and the perks. It's time to clean out the arrogance. It's time to take the huge, huge press-laden egos and put them away. It's time to clean out the scandals. It's time to end the corner cutting and the incredible foot dragging. Reagan said that 50 years ago, whatever, back in the 70s. That's what, or early 80s, that's what Ronald Reagan do say. And it really captures our current situation. It's just absolutely frightening. I had a conversation this morning with Bruce Pasipal, who's driving to southern Texas, down by the border, down directly to one of the border cities. And I just said, good luck, man. Whatever you do, don't pick up any charges, because you're going to never know what's coming. Do we need these immigrants? We need them now more than ever, because you can't get a lazy American to wash dishes or wait on tables. I mean, you just can't find people to work. Americans aren't going to do that. That's way beneath them. So we do need these people to come in at an entry level and do these jobs and then grow through the system. I don't know. And as far as energy is concerned, Daniel, you hit the nail right on the head. That's all we need to do, is open up the energy. He who holds the energy holds most of the deck of cards. So, yeah.
That was well said, Larkin. I like that.
That's right. I asked a friend the other day, how does the United States of America pay back $300 trillion? And he said, it's virtually impossible. It's virtually impossible. So we've painted ourselves into a corner. And oh, by the way, Biden just announced, as the program was starting, a $300 billion kill the education bill. You know, nobody has to pay back the debt now. You decided you wanted to go to college. You didn't have the money, so you borrowed the money at a very low interest rate. Now you don't have to pay it back. He wants to give $10,000 to every person who has a college debt and makes less than $125,000 a year, and he wants to give $10,000 to each former student who has a student debt in a couple environment who makes $250,000 a year. So if you make $250,000 a year as a household, $249,900, you're going to get $10,000 for the mama, and if the daddy's got some debt, he's going to get $10,000. This will cost us $300 billion on top of the $32 billion that Biden has already spent in canceling the debts up to this point. So what, somebody needs to tell Washington, D.C., student loan debt, for that matter, no debt can be canceled. It can only be transferred. That's all you can do with debt. You either pay it back or you transfer it. You can't cancel it. I mean, you can. But what do you do to the entire world monetary system if you cancel $300 trillion of debt that we have to note holders, to bonds, to foreign countries, to foreign banks? Daniel, I'd love to hear your take on that.
Student debt is a very important market signal. Canceling it, however you want to phrase it, is just terrible economics. It's unfair to those of us who don't have or who did pay off their loans. So that there's just grave injustices of what Biden is doing. But we're ignoring the really important market signal it is trying to tell us. And it's telling us this. You went to Brown, you got your degree in poetry, you have $300,000 in debt, and you can't find a job. It's telling us that that degree is useless. And when enough people see that, they say, huh, maybe I won't go to Brown and get a poetry degree and incur that debt because it doesn't have a value. And over time, the markets will course correct because people will stop following this bad decision. But if we take away the market signal, we're going to be inviting more people to go to Brown and get a poetry degree. And that's the problem. We've been telling people unnecessarily to go to college since early on in the Bush administration, and Obama was also a huge fan of this belief that everyone has to go to college. I have nothing opposed to college, but not everyone needs to go to college, and there are many jobs that don't require a college degree. But we've skewed the markets by telling people you have to get a college degree to be successful, that we, quite frankly, have too many college graduates. And if we, rather than emphasize a degree, if we emphasized a skill set or a value-producing career, we wouldn't have this problem. So Biden's doing a double damage. He's not only doing an injustice by making us socialize their debt and taking money from me to pay the Brown graduate, but he's also getting rid of that necessary market signal, and that's never going to allow the course to correct itself.
Before we go further, I just want to mention, driving in today, Nancy Pelosi said that she heard that Biden was talking about that, but that no president has the authority to do something like that. It would have to come before the House and Senate. So although they just passed this Inflation Reduction Act, which I don't know what good that is going to do. And with the fact that they're going to hire 87,000 additional IRS agents concerns me, because the entire IRS at this point only has 78,000 people in the entire system. So hiring more than you have right now doesn't make any kind of sense. But they're saying they're going to go after the big amounts of people who they may have not been claiming everything properly on their annual income tax return. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But
I want to add something to that, too. I just have to stick this in there. There was a cartoon I saw recently with a huge alligator, crocodile, whatever, enormous. And the label on the side was inflation. And there were two people holding the jaws open. They were standing right in their jaws with their arms up, stretched, and they're holding the jaws of inflation open. And up pulls a truck. And the one guy turns to the other guy and says, finally, some relief from the government. And the guy gets out of the truck and says, I'm here to audit you two guys.
No, it's going to be a circus. Now, my question is, and I don't want to take away from Rich Loges, but I want to say, once this midterm election really gets started, say in September and October, are we going to have people stand up and say, we are going to introduce legislation to stop the emergency, this and emergency that, the anti-inflation bill? Are we going to have a politician or a person seeking our vote able to say, I'm going to introduce legislation that's going to return all production of oil in the United States back to where it was in the year 2020? Is there such a person around, Daniel, that you can see?
I think we will get some good legislation like that. It will not go anywhere, because winning the Senate is still very much 50-50, and at this point I'm kind of a lean no, unfortunately. And even if the Republicans did flip the Senate, you're still not going to get anything that Biden is going to sign on. But they can gum up the system, and that's very valuable, right? It shouldn't work easily. That's why, you know, talks of filibuster reform are always a little daunting. We shouldn't make it easy to pass legislation, and this using reconciliation to pass a $730 billion piece of legislation in 4 days is not the way the system is supposed to work, right? No. These are abuses of the system. So I am fine if only Republicans win the House. I am fine if nothing gets done and everything that gets done and everything grinds to a standstill, because legislation at the federal level should be slow, it should be thoughtful, and it should be difficult. And easy government is bad government.
Daniel, would you agree, which I've promoted this for years, anything so unbelievably important to the American people, whether it's raising taxes, whether it's giving things away, and whether it's adding to our $30 trillion debt, should really be on the ballot for the voters to approve?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are certain pieces of legislation that need to be, going back to the idea of giving town halls and explaining to your constituents why you're voting for it. If the system actually worked the way it's designed, if we had proper markups, if we had proper committee hearings and went through the process, we would air out a lot more of these details. But that's not how we do legislation anymore. Notice this Congress has passed very few pieces of legislation. They've passed very big, mammoth, thousands of pages, enormous omnibus bills, where they throw everything from healthcare reform to immigration to everything under the sun is thrown in there, because they want to hide what they're doing.
You know, that's why I think that every bill, every piece of legislation should stand on its own. No, you know, packing on this and that to get it passed through, because it would never get through in the first place. But when the presidential debates come up, I think presidents should say, I'm telling you now, I'm not going to approve any legislation as the executive, the chief executive of this country. I'm not going to approve any legislation that is going to degrade our country, is going to overtax our country, divide our country, and take our jobs out of the USA, period. Then that person puts themselves on the chopping block to either be supported or to, you know, be pushed aside. We don't have that today. Everything is this, well, let's see. No, you have to be upfront about what you have to do and what you're going to do. Can I turn to Rich Logis? Rich, thank you for holding one, and Daniel is the best, as you know.
Thanks, Michael. And Daniel, good morning. Thanks for coming back on to me.
Thank
you. Good morning to everyone. And, you know, in my world, Daniel, of technology, I sell custom hardware and software technologies for businesses mostly. And I've given myself, or tried to give myself, a crash course in the last year or so on petro markets and how international and global the market is, and learning along the way, because admittedly it was not an industry that I really knew much about, and I still don't think I know that much about it, albeit maybe a little bit more. But something that I did want to ask you is that, because I'm genuinely really interested in hearing why you think this is, I would like to ask you why you think, what are the factors that have driven gas prices coming down, right? Because they have been coming down for 2+ months. And I realize that that can slightly vary depending on where we are in the country, but I'm interested in hearing what you think the reasons are for that and why that's been happening. And how you think it will continue.
I think gas prices have come down, and it's good they're coming down, but they've only come down on demand destruction. If you take Adam Smith's basic formula for the economy, the only way to drive down the price is one of two ways. You either increase the supply, which we have not done. Our supply has been absolutely stagnant, or you drive down the demand. And proof of that is that when you look at our gas consumption July of 2022 and compare it to July of 2020, we used less gas. We drove less in our cars in 2022 than we did in 2020. And think about where we were in 2020. Governor Cuomo, back in my home state of New York, had guards on the bridges and tunnels to make sure out-of-state license plates didn't cross in, right? Or New Yorkers coming in were checked for their vaccination status. 2022, July of 2020, July of 2020 was the height of COVID lockdown, curfews, beaches were closed, right? Remember, those are the images of helicopters going along the beaches of the Jersey Shore, making sure no one was on the beach. And we used less oil this year than we did 2 years ago. And the reason why it was so darn expensive, we didn't. But what did go up in price from 2 years ago was food. Food went up 13%. And the reason why is because you have to eat. But you didn't have to go to the Jersey Shore, right? Or you didn't have to take your kids to Hershey Park for the weekend like you did one summer in the past. So we changed our behavior because we couldn't afford it, but we didn't change the fact that we had to eat. And so demand destruction is real, and Biden owns that, right? Biden said, I'm going to do everything in my power to drive down prices, and he did. He drove us into economic depression, and we consumed less, and that slowly did drive down prices. Will it continue? I don't know. Also, we have to remember China is basically on lockdown right now because their COVID cases are through the roof, and they live in a communist hellhole. So most of China is still in curfew, locked in their houses. If China comes back online and they start using oil again, prices are going to go back up. Oil's up $5 today from where it was a week ago. I hope that's not the right direction. I don't want to see oil go back above 100. I want to see oil at 55, 60. That's a sustainable rate for everybody. But demand destruction is real, and that's what's driving it.
Thank you for that, Daniel. So there's a thought that comes to mind in what you're saying. And I have this joke that I say to some of my friends here and some of my business associates, where there's this term, pent-up demand. And my joke is always that, you know, a lot of Americans talk like they were in a prisoner of war camp for 2 years, and their abilities to get drunk were slightly interfered with. And I think what I'm saying is that I actually think it's the exact opposite of what you're saying. I think that Americans love to spend money. And because they love to spend money, we have a hard time. It's difficult to get people to think about life outside of their own personal sphere, right? I think we may agree with that, that, you know, it's hard to get people to see stuff outside of their own home. And what I can tell you from where I live, where I am in South Florida, I have never seen more spending than right now. So I guess I'm wondering what demand depression you're referring to, because I see the exact opposite where I am.
Yeah, well,
now,
you live in the where
I am. Now, I know where I am. It, you know, I'm not saying where I am is exactly like the country. But when I talk to all of my clients and customers around the country, I've asked them this question. And my question is, do you feel like, you know, do you feel like your demand is lower for their products? And I don't, I guess, Daniel, what I'm saying is I'm not seeing what you're saying. And I'm not saying that necessarily you're wrong, I'm right. I actually see the exact opposite. I see the desire to spend is more zealous now than I ever remember in my entire life at 45 years old. That's just my 2 cents, 1.69 cents when adjusted for inflation comment.
No, and that's great, and that's very, I think that's very emblematic of Florida as a whole and the success your state is having, and the reason why you know, you've grown by over 400,000 people in the last calendar year. People are moving there for that reason. But when you just look at the sheer numbers based upon the Department of Energy of how much oil we are consuming, when you compare 2022 to 2020, we're consuming less. And so, of course, there are going to be some areas that are anomalies. Florida is one of them. There are other states that are also having success, but nationwide, we're not seeing those numbers, and that's tragic, right? And everyone wants to experience what you're experiencing right now, which is why, heck, even politicians who criticize Florida and make fun of it, when no one's looking, that's where they're secretly going on vacation. And I think your governor has done a great job pointing that out and laughing at them, saying, "We'll always take your hypocrisy dollars here because you're staying in our hotels and eating in our restaurants."
I mean, I would say that's true, but, you know, think of it also, Daniel, there is a flip side. So rent in New York City are higher than they've ever been. There's not a depressed demand there. New York City's not exactly a bastion of right-wing conservatism, right? Their rents are record high right now, New York City. So what I'm saying is that, of course, at every square inch it's different. I'm just offering for listeners that I see in the country the exact opposite. I see a zeal to spend, and we're a consumer-based economy. What I see in my world of business, dealing with all companies of different sizes, I see the opposite. I see it I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just stating my own observation because we're prisoners of our own, you know, of our own livelihood. But, you know, I appreciate the reasons that you're giving, you know, and I do trust your expertise. I think that the nuance of this is the way that we look at it in the country. I'm just seeing it the opposite way. I'm not seeing a depressed demand. I'm seeing a demand that, like, people were on a deserted island for 3 years.
Well, in that respect, Rich, I 100% agree. But being at our shore points along the Atlantic, I do see a lot of people, tons of people walking the boardwalk, but they're not spending as they did in the past. They're spending on the things that are necessary. Even when we were riding in today to the studio, we looked at, and there were a number of properties for sale right here in Philadelphia, and a number of properties for rent that have been on the market for several months. And it's mainly because people are saying, I'm just going to stay where I am at this point. I'm not going to take on something new. And many of the places that are now for rent used to be for people who came to be interns at the hospitals and things like that. They're not coming in the numbers that they did before. So it's all sides of the thing. But the sad part of all that we're talking about is Daniel and Larkin and Rich and Mark, the news media is taking our full attention away from inflation. It's taking Absolutely. Our full attention away from everything that we should be paying attention to stop this. I don't understand how they just can go on and not talk about how are we going to do things together to keep these gas prices going, which would be open up all of the production that we have in the United States. Anytime somebody brings up that subject on many of the radio stations, immediately their head is chopped off. It goes to a commercial. It's some kind of a thing to distract the people. They want to play on this, you know, this game of everything is fine. It's not. Mike, it's not. Yes.
I'd like to just comment on what Rich said. So at the Erie County Fair, 12 days I stood there. These people, the Americans, are a little crazy. They're going to buy what they want. They paid $16 for a chicken dinner. They paid $20 to throw three darts. They do what they do. And I've seen that, Rich. But on the other hand, I usually sell 60 snowplows. I sell truck equipment. I sold 30. All the trucks, Ford trucks, I didn't sell one of my 30 plows. They're all going on Chevys because you can't order a Ford till January. So all these things we're seeing, there's a lot hidden that this economy is affected. And they got to talk about that supply chain issue. And the answer to the supply chain issue is buy American.
Buy American. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear by the music, it's time for us to say thank you to all of you for tuning in. And remember, there's something very interesting about our broadcast. We send it out early this afternoon to thousands of people, and we ask that you copy that email and send it off to your family and friends so we'll continue to get more and more people interested in supporting America and supporting American workers. I want to say thank you to our special guest, Daniel Turner, founder and executive director of Power of the Future, and to Rich Logis, Mark Andel, Larkin Conley, our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihosh. I wish you and yours the very best. Stay well and be happy until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11. May God bless you and may God bless America, and go out and buy American made. As Mark just said, that's the way to get things moving here in the USA.
Have a great week,
thanks,
guys.
Everyone.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Daniel.
On.